You're listening to The God Journey, a place where people thinking outside the box of organized religion can share thoughts and conversation along the journey. Here are your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
I'm Brad Cummings.
Oh, and I'm Wayne Jacobson.
Oh, you sound like you're in pain, Wayne.
Well, you wanted to talk about pain today, so here we are, I guess.
Well, I don't know that it's my favorite subject, but I do think that it's a real challenge for a lot of people when they're going through stuff to figure out where God is.
It's important, isn't it? Because people get into, I mean, I do. I remember when I was in college. My first year of college, I worked hard to get reputation so that I could get a job the next year, the resident advisor job. And I was going to get that job for the next year because that would pay my room and board.
Ooh.
Which for a farmer's kid, that was pretty important, get the room and board paid for. Already had the other part paid for because of the grades I brought in. But I wanted the room and board. And so I was like, well, pretty much, at least they can get caught. Let's say it that way. And then as they came down selecting RAs for the next year, when the list was posted, man, I found out I wasn't on it. And there were other people on it that I knew. I got to tell you, I knew I was better than them and had been far less trouble than they had been in. So I went down to see the dean to find out why was I left off this list. And he told me a story about something I'd been accused of doing, which I had not done. Someone had fabricated a story about me. It had traveled among the deans.
Ooh.
And I had been left out of the job. And then when I said, you know, it didn't true and I could prove it wasn't true. He said, oh, my gosh, I'm sorry. Then I tell you what, you're already an alternate anyway. He said, we'll make you a first alternate. If the job opens up, you can get it. I remember walking out of his office, and I mean feeling really ripped off. Here's something I really wanted,
right?
Felt called to be, because that was always part of really wanting something is feeling called to it. I was sure God had this for me, and I didn't get it. It was pouring down rain, and I went up on the football field, up on the intramural. It's a hill up back behind the dorm, a driving Oklahoma rainstorm. I got to tell you, I told God everything I'd ever wanted to tell him about all kinds of things. I was so angry that I'd been cheated out of saying that he couldn't watch over my tail better than he didn't watch over it in that case. And I look back at that now. It's so far removed from the way I would think about him. But when I look back to that moment, I did grow up with some sense of, if God really loved me, everything's going to work out good. And I'm going to get, and I wouldn't have to hurt or be in pain or whatever. God has disillusioned that notion a number of times since, but I think many of us do. Many of us grow up with a sense of, that if we really get this God thing right, if God really loves me and I really love him, then I'm never going to go through painful things. But I tell you what, everything Jesus said, everything the early church wrote, flies in the face of that.
You know, I don't think this makes it to the front of most refrigerators as the memory verse, but Jesus says, you know, in this life you will have trouble. And, you know, if you look at that. What
you don't
that
have
word
that on
means,
your fridge?
No, it's on my fridge. I know it. It's there. But the word trouble, I mean, I studied it once. It says bone-crushing opposition. It's reduced to trouble. Bone-crushing opposition is a little more intimidating. And that's what is meant there, is that in this life, it's going to be hard. And it's like, we don't recognize, but that's like a promise from Jesus. This life is going to have bone-crushing opposition. But to finish that verse, he says, but be of good cheer.
But when we always read that, it was we always thought of it as persecution. So, yeah, the believers in China, the believers
yeah, but
in
it's not.
Somewhere I else may get it. No, it's a broader word than that. The word goes to any kind of trouble or pain that visits our lives. And the longer you live, and the longer you live in God, the more you notice living in God doesn't mean he keeps you from every painful, hurtful reality that this world can dole out. It's not true.
Yeah, I mentioned this in a podcast a little while back. One of the points where I just learned this just profoundly came clear when I was sitting in the dentist chair. I think I mentioned this story, but I think it's worth repeating. I was sitting there, and the dentist, you know, this is like Gentle Dentistry. That's the name of this place. And this is.
It's a lie. It's a lie.
But the guy has, like, shot me full of Novocaine. He's about to work on a tooth, and, you know, he's trying to figure out I've got numbed up. And so, you know, gives the shot, comes back. You know, your mouth is supposed to blow up like an elephant. You're not supposed to be able to feel anything. I felt everything. And he says, is your mouth numb yet? I said, no. And so he gives me another shot. He goes through this five times. He looks at me like I'm the biggest chicken on planet Earth. He figures, there's no way you're not numb. And so he begins work. And I could feel everything. I was about ready to dig through the chair. And I'm just, you know, this is, you know, I'm going through it and just like, oh. And clear as a bell, I felt the presence of God settle on me, and the pain didn't dissipate whatsoever. And that was the biggest conundrum I had experienced yet, because I'm just going like, wait a minute, I'd always grown up with like, presence of God, absence of pain.
Exactly.
Presence of pain must be absence of God.
Sin in my life.
Now
I do something.
Here I go. Presence of pain and presence of God. No, that doesn't work with my formulas. It's like, wait a minute. But as I left the dentist office, it was as if the conversation I had that followed in terms of my understanding, I knew God was trying to get my attention. I knew he was trying to teach me something that would, you know, as proved out to be incredibly valuable in terms of a turning point. I had interpreted most of my life through a lens of where there was painful things. I ended up feeling abandoned by God in those moments. I ended up feeling as if somehow something's wrong. You know, the simplistic little formula of, you know, blessing for obedience, you know, cursing for disobedience. So whenever the outcome of my desire doesn't happen, something must be wrong. Either I screwed up or God's absent. But somehow I would look at God through the lens of my circumstance, and if it wasn't what I wanted, then I was estranged from my relationship with God. And in that moment, God was trying to say, guess what, Brad? The presence of pain in your life is not proof of my absence. I am with you in the midst of that. And I got to tell you, it's like I met Jesus afresh in a whole new way through that encounter. I don't want to experience it again. I you know, I don't know if I've gone back to the dentist.
Yeah, really? That accounts for a lot of things. Then.
I value it, but I don't want to repeat it. But
how long ago was it?
I don't know. I brushed my teeth this morning. I'm fine.
Okay.
But the reality is that really changed the way I saw stuff, and I began to just went, wait a minute. I think the planet in which we live on has been dramatically impacted by the presence of sin. Therefore, I'm not going to be immune from the consequences of living in a fallen world. It doesn't turn out just the way a perfect world in the garden, you know, was possible. It's like we're living in a challenged war zone of reality. And the good news is not that, gee, you're in a war zone. The good news is God isn't absent from that. And I find that so many people get shipwrecked in terms of their disappointments. And they end up feeling like, oh, how could God love me? Or how could God be loving? Or I'm not sure, you know. And it's like they throw all of that out. And you're just going like, wait a minute. It's different than that.
Yeah, it is. And somehow the whole mystique we've created around Christianity in the 21st century, even though we'll talk about pain and, yeah, times of suffering is there, but what we're really selling people, I think, in all kinds of things, is that if you really serve God right and really love him, then you're going to be happy and prosperous. Everything's going to be great. Your circumstances will be wonderful. You live in a nice home. Have a great paycheck. We've created this idea, and I think some of the self-help books do that. If you do these five things, you'll have a happy marriage. Do these three things, you'll never have disease. If you drink this ugly barley stuff, you'll never have cancer. And the reality is, where is God in the midst of those things? And most people that I deal with, I don't know about you, but when I deal with people going through pain, almost 80% of the conversation is their trouble that they having pain. Because where is God? Rather than, and I think probably more so than the pain itself would be, if they could just see God with them in this moment. Not that the pain is proof he's abandoned them, or that they've sinned in such a way that he just can't be near them anymore. That's not true, but that's the inner lie, I guess, that so many of us either enculturated in. Maybe it's just a part of our flesh that screams out and says, hey, life should really be pain-free. I know when my kids grew up, I had lunch with you the first time one of your kids had said, Daddy, I hate you, and you came to
yes.
pretty crushed to lunch. My kid told me they hated me this morning, and I remember saying to you, it won't be the last time. And because kids grow up with a sense of, if you really love me, you'll give me everything I want. That's a pretty immature, when we talk about kids, that's a pretty immature response. As kids grow up, they learn that you can actually love them and not give them everything they want. And I, spiritually, I think that's part of it too. As we're going to grow up in God, he is not going to give us everything we want. He's not going to create a pathway for us that misses every painful, needy, hurtful thing.
Well, it's also hard to come to the realization that everything that I want, not all those things are at all good for me.
Most of that's true.
You know, and it's like, you look at that, and it's like, I thank God that he edits some of my requests. You know, you can see in Scripture, there's times that Israel cried out for something for a long time. God finally relented and gave them what they asked for. You know, when they were like, it was like a judgment to receive that. You're just going, oh, that's not good at all.
Yep.
And I think to begin to just sort of, you know, we're not going to definitively answer everything that even relates or even scratch the surface in terms of the challenge that people have with pain. But I think just one of the things to realize is that the presence of pain is not the absence of God. Just that alone gives me hope.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's like in the midst of what's going on, that told me, it's like, wait a minute, I feel like I'm dying. I think it's more the fear of pain that a lot of people try to avoid, and they live life, you know, trying to avoid pain.
And we're certainly not going to call the show Pain is Virtue, because this self-flagellation. Try to find as much hurt as you can. But the New Testament is very clear. Every writer of the New Testament, including Jesus' own words himself, said not only will we have it, but God uses trials, tribulations, pains to work out wonderful things in us, which to me does not mean God orchestrates our pain. God just, you know what? I think I'll do something neat anyway, and I'm going to put him in a car accident today and lay him up for 6 months.
Yeah, he's just got to learn a lesson.
I mean, God's just not that way. That is so not the way God thinks. But we live, like you said, we live in a world that has been thrust into the chaos of sin. Our world is in conflict with the Creator, so much so that even Paul wrote that creation longs in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed in Romans chapter 8. Creation waits for the day when this pain and hurt and conflict is no longer there. But as long as we're in it, he's in it. And he says, I'll use it to shape the deepest bits of character in your life. I'll make you more like me through the hurtful things you go through. And I have to say that's true. I look back over 52 years of living, and I would say every wonderful thing that God's produced in my life, 90% of those have come out of extremity, pain, screaming. I tell people I came kicking and screaming into this kingdom, because every time God invites me to greater freedom, it's usually through something that hurts. And I think that's partly why I wanted to see us get on this topic at some point, because so many people who start to journey with God and maybe breaking free of some old habit patterns and ways of thinking about him, suddenly find that life's not getting any easier. Man, people are telling lies about me, and stuff's going on in my life, and I'm finding out that my marriage is not as good as I thought it was, or my kids are going through, as adults, some real horrible things in their life. And suddenly it's, well, God's not good, God's not with me, God's not. Instead of, we've got to learn, if we're going to live this journey, I think, to stop hiding from the pain and stop running from it and stop running to things that are just easy and comfortable and embrace what God's doing in us, even if it's through pain.
I don't think it's possible to avoid pain in this life. And, you know, I got young kids, and so you watch a lot of parents as they try to approach different challenges. Most of them are trying to protect their kids from pain, and I don't think that's so awful. It's just you're not going to accomplish that.
It doesn't work.
A far better thing would be to prepare your children to process through it, to recognize that it will touch their life. It will shape your life and how you go about dealing with it, how you go about navigating your way through the confusions, the conundrums, the disillusions, meaning I had illusions and now they're dissed. It's like some truth hit it.
Yep.
I think that's a far more helpful, effectual approach. I mean, it's interesting. I was having a long discussion with my dad a lot of his life. You know, I mean, he's 66 years old, and he's sort of come, you know, to the end of you know, his career with this sense of, you know, there should be this grand finale and celebration. It's far from that. I mean, he is going through just excruciating challenges, circumstantially, left, right, and center. You're just going like, you know, if I were to list them, you'd end up going like, oh, man, that's terrible. And he's having a really rough go trying to figure out, I don't understand this. God seems far from me. And we were having a conversation the other morning, and we were talking about this, and I just helping him trying to process. And I said, you know, you know, the whole book of Job. I mean, arguably, it is probably the first book of the Bible that was actually penned. You know,
right,
it
first one written.
It wasn't Genesis. And I find that in and of itself a little bit of a profound message, perhaps. And because you're dealing with the proverbial sense of this guy's life, God said he was like the tallest tree in the forest. I mean, he's pure and blameless, upright. There's none like him. So it, you know, the calamity that followed was the desire of Satan to attack him and say, well, the reason he blesses you and praises you is because you do all these great things for him. How about you let me at him, destroy his life a little bit, and let's see what he says.
And you got to kind of hope at a moment like that God says no.
Yeah, you got to like, there's something.
No, you can't have Adam.
There's something
alone
to be learned about a God through that book of the Bible that says, you know, he said yes. It's like, guess what? That is, like it or not, the God that we're relating to. A God who, at the request of the devil to strike at you, in that particular instance, that God didn't just principally say, no, never. He said, okay. There were limits on it. There is a measure of protection around us, but it doesn't make us immune from things striking. And
it's the same thing when Jesus told Peter, Satan's asked permission to sift you like wheat. And I think Peter's probably saying, no, and you told him no, right?
Yeah, you said no, right?
Oh, yeah. He didn't say no. What are you thinking here?
What did he say?
Well, he said, I've already prayed for you that your faith fail not and you return and strengthen your brothers. Jesus is already in Peter's failure with him. This is Peter's failure.
Right.
This is Peter's now going to deny his best friend. And he's going to be racked with the misery of all that. And Jesus, what I love about that story is when Jesus says to Peter, I've already prayed for you that your faith fail not, you return and strengthen your brothers. He's already prayed for Peter beyond the failure Peter hasn't even committed yet.
Yeah.
Which I think that's an amazing story of grace and life. And God's not our place to hide from any conceivably bad thing happening to us. He's our place to hide in everything that happens to us.
See, I think for a lot of people, the you know, the crisis moment of the entrance of pain, sadly becomes for many people a crisis of faith.
It does,
and I think rather it can be a doorway to deeper understanding. I mean,
isn't it true that most of us have? I mean, particularly if you've grown up in the developed West. We don't know what real need is. I mean, I've never had a hungry night. I've been on a fast for a number of days, and you kind of think you're dying there. But
it's voluntary.
But it's voluntary. It's not, you don't know real need. Some of the biggest needs you know are, you got the flu or you can't go to work because you have a horrible headache. So you grow up in a pretty cushy kind of environment, and then when you realize that that doesn't always work, that bad things really do happen to good people. Then you've got to deal with, as our culture has, well, then God's evil, obviously, if he lets that happen. He can't be all loving and all powerful and let bad things happen. So I don't want to get into that whole debate. But the crisis of faith does come. How can God say he loves me? And I had a woman say this to me. In fact, she was trying to share something with me. This was back in Massachusetts a number of years ago. Couldn't quite come out with it. She said, will you pray for me? And I said, yeah, pray for her. As I was praying for her, I just had this little moment of seeing a little girl, about a five-year-old girl, running in a meadow. And so I just prayed for her that God would make her like a five-year-old girl running in a meadow, just bring her to joy. And she stopped me from praying. She stopped and she said, what do you know? And I said, what do you mean? Tears are running down. She said, that's what I didn't want to tell you. I said, what? At 5 years old, my cousin led me into a meadow and raped me.
Oh.
And so I hear you talk about God's love for me, and I'm thinking, how do I trust a God to love me when he wasn't there for me? Those are the hard questions. I can tell you, I don't have answers for that.
No.
Except to say, no, God doesn't mean God doesn't love you. That's not what it means. Yeah, I wish God would stop all those things. I do. I've been with severely damaged people who are victims of child abuse, victims of sexual abuse, of rape. I know lots of people who've been through that stuff, and it is huge in terms of God crawling into that. And you're right, it's the rape. That's one thing to deal with.
Right.
It's another thing to deal with, where was God when I was at that point? And even, you know, for every kid that comes home from war, cried out in the foxhole, God, if you save me, I'll live my life for you. My dad was one of those. But for everyone that did, you've got hundreds of kids that didn't.
That don't, yeah.
And whose parents' prayers weren't answered. And I think that does create this inner tension with this guy. How do I embrace a God of love who doesn't protect me at those kinds of moments?
Well, I don't think there's an easy answer whatsoever. I think one of the realities of living in a world in which God has designed it where he has created other sovereign beings, meaning us, we actually have a will that we can choose. With that, I can choose right things that will bless the world around me. And alongside that, if it's at all real, I can also choose to disavow that and do really wrong things that also have consequences, not just to my life, but evil can be perpetrated upon others. And if this is the world in which we live, I mean, I think people go like, I don't want to live in that world. And it's like, well, I don't think that option's in front of me.
Yeah, it's not.
I would love to not live in that world too. But the problem is I don't have a choice on that. I landed in this one. And this one has the reality where evil is a choice that can be made by individuals. And I don't think this is a satisfying answer to everything, but I know it was really helpful when I think this just flashed in my understanding a number of years back. For love to be real, it has to be able to be chosen, and it also has to be able to be not chosen for it to be real. And it seems to me that God has designed things in such a way that for the reality of genuine love, evil can be present and chosen that can bring about terrible results. But so too can genuine love. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that God is not so weak so as to allow that, but is in fact so profoundly powerful and love is so amazingly valuable that he's risking the other outcomes that can shipwreck lives. And again, it doesn't answer, well, gee, well, you know, why, where was he? But I have experienced the fact in some of the real tragedies of our life, that's where I've recognized God was there. He didn't allow me to avoid what happened. Yep. It happened. Yep. Some of my own making, some I was victim of. But the reality is the fact that he was there, I don't know, that didn't fully, I still have why questions, but they're not as profound when I can find his presence.
Exactly. And one of the things we talked about with that lady who was now in her 40s, who had been raped at 5 by her cousin, and I said, you know what, somehow God is obviously making clear to you that he was there, not in the way you or I would have necessarily seen that he would have had to be a loving God, but he was still there for you. And somehow he's now there for you in that hurt. And I don't have a pat answer to slap on this and say, hey, here's what fixed it. I just said, I'm going to pray for you that God will sort out his love in you. And she wrote me about 6 months later and she said, you know, Wayne, I've been praying and trying, nothing's changing and I still have all this hurt. And do you have anything that you could say? And I pretty much wrote back to her. I said, I don't know what to say, except let's keep asking God to make himself known in this for you. That's what we're going to keep doing that until about 9 months later, I got an email from her in about 64-point type. And it just said, I get it, in quotes.
Wow.
Love so-and-so. And I've talked to her since. And, I mean, somehow, and it's not, no, she's learned something now that everybody who's been through that kind of thing can apply, and they'll have the same. No, you've got to know God at the moment of your greatest pain or hurt. That's what it was for Job, you brought up. In the middle of all, it's just kids being, I mean, people died here. So it's not just some little fun test that God constructed.
Carnage.
And I have some comments about how those first few chapters would play out, but we don't have time to really get into it. Does God really make deals with the devil for that kind of a thing, or is that illustrating some larger reality? And I don't want to make the point here, but we could discuss that at some future point maybe. But the fact is, we live in this chaotic world, the sin you talk about. And I love that idea about sin. Sin when I was growing up was, here's all the fun things God says you can't do. Because I got to, anger's kind of fun, lust is kind of fun. I mean, there's things that are just fun. And now, you know, the big old God made the rules, so all the fun stuff is illegal. Yeah. But now, I tell you, and when people really begin to learn grace, the way we've talked about it, the way I like to talk about it with people, they just, as Paul kept anticipating, people would say, oh, well, then we just sin because God loves us and doesn't care. When you know what sin is, when sin in my life diminishes me as a human being, and it diminishes anybody else around me that's touched by that sin.
Yeah.
If I get angry, there's something about the anger, and anger has been a big thing in my life, something about that anger that diminishes who God made me to be. But you know what? When it gets out at Sarah or my friend down the street or you, when anger comes out, it not only hurts me, it hurts them.
Yeah.
And then you get to things like sexual abuse and other things that just, I mean, really take evil to a whole nother level.
Snowballs down the hill into something huge.
The more you know God's love, you don't get more compliant about sin or complacent about it. I mean, I want God to rip every sin and failure out of my life and the reasons for doing and to set me free from it. I do, as only He can do. But we never make the excuse for it. And the choices, like you said, the choices that we have, God, how do I live increasingly redemptive in the world? Not being a source of other people's pain or bondage or hurt. But realizing when people are for me, see, some of these things are easier to explain. When I started, in fact, my kind of being ushered out the door of the congregation I was involved in, the last more traditional structure, it was through some people telling some lies about me that were only lies about me leaving, but lies that continued and have continued to this day.
Mm.
For someone who served his reputation more than I served God before that, and I'll be honest about it, I mean, I was just nuts about everybody thinking well of Wayne. I was devastated. I mean, rumors about me having had an affair was one of those rumors, quite honestly. And I was confronted by an unbeliever about it who I'd shared the Lord with, who said, "Hey, how's Sarah doing?" And I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, I heard you left the ministry because you had an affair." And I'm just going, "My goodness, what's going on?" But people were so wanting to discredit me that they would allow all that. And now I look back at moments like that now, because it was two, I could tell you the story, and we've told bits of it, but two very, very dark years of knowing lies were being told about me, wanting to rise to my own defense, having felt like God's told me not to, even when I was dead right and could prove it, because God wanted me to trust my reputation with Him. Well, that, I tell you, 6 months into that, I thought it was a pretty stupid thing to do. God did not treat my reputation like I thought it should be treated. At a point, somebody shared with me, my dad, I'd gone up to have a personal retreat, and he read a bit from the Sermon on the Mount, and blessed are you when people exclude you and lie about you and say all manner of evil against you. And I'm like, I don't want to hear that stuff. It didn't feel good at all.
Flip the page. Let's read something else.
Yes. I like going back to the Psalms where David says, my enemies, burn them, devour them, destroy their children to a million generations. And I mean, I got into some of those prayers at that time more than the Sermon on the Mount. But I tell you now, 2 years out, watching God use my love for my reputation to destroy Wayne's need to live for other people's approval. I now look back at those 2 years with a whole different deal. I look back and go, that is the most precious gift I've received in the last 10 years. I live every day of my life now free to do what God wants instead of being tyrannized by what other people think I should be doing or what or how I perceive they're thinking of me if I'm not doing what pleases them. And yet I don't know if I would have gotten there short of all that stuff. Now that's easier for me to explain those kinds of things.
Yeah, but there are a bunch of things that just frankly are unexplainable. When you look at the book of Job, what was so fascinating to me is here's all this carnage and this troubled stuff that happens, and you get Job's three friends, nice discomforters, with their little religious trite. Job, you must have sinned. Bottom line, God says He's blameless. Job, you must have sinned. It's like, you know, the blessing for obedience, cursing for disobedience. You must have disobeyed. You did something. There's some sin there. And you're just going like, okay, that is so empty. Job's able to kind of work his way through that. But then he gets slammed.
He has to come up with God's evil.
Yeah, but then he comes up with little Elihu, who's going like, Job, who are you to question God? And it's like, you know, there's some aspect. It's like, God bless Elihu and defending God's honor. But you sit there, it's like, even that's a blast where you're just going like, you know what? He's got some genuine inquiry. God, none of this makes sense. I do feel a little bit like I have a legitimate beef that I need some understanding. And I think that is so great that he was able to really voice this to God. But then I asked my dad, I said, Dad, what was God's answer? I mean, the wisest being in all of existence, the one who knows it all, could have said, well, you know what? The devil came to me. I mean, there was an explanation.
I made a bad deal.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But he basically completely ignores Job's question. I mean, any face value reading, Job's asking for understanding as to why, and God avoids the issue and says, hey, Job, you know, were you there when I made a fish? And you're just going like, excuse me, that's not nice. That's not fair. And I sat there, and it's like a little eureka of a conversational understanding happened. I realized, you know what? So oftentimes we're trying to look through our life through the lens of the circumstance we experienced. And if it's blessing, then God's a wonderful, good, generous, loving God. He just did this great thing for me. And it's like, oh, isn't God great? But to the people that didn't experience that or in that moment aren't experiencing that, they're looking through their lens and they're going, I don't know who this God is. And I just realized when God says, Job, were you there when I made a fish? He's trying to get us to a different starting place. I don't think the right starting place in our life is looking at God through the lens of my experience. I think that will give you a faulty understanding, be it wonderfully happy or terribly tragic.
Right.
I think the starting place that God was trying to begin with Job is, Job, let's begin with me. Mm-hmm. Let's not begin with your life and your evaluation of it. Did you get what you want? Do you think you got what you deserve?
Yep.
He said, I want you to begin with me.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, perhaps a little bit of medicine for anyone who's hurting is, you know what, I can't answer why you went through what you did. I don't even know that God is going to answer why you went through what you did. I mean, I love people that say, well, everything happens for a reason. I'll be honest, I'm not so sure I can embrace that fatalistic approach that just says every last little I think some things happen. You know, there are T-shirts that shorten that with colloquialisms. It's just going like, I think there's some truth there.
And boy, if you've ever been to a funeral of a young kid or whatever tragically killed, that you got to stretch that too. If one person comes to Christ because of this, it was all worth it. I think that's really humanistic thinking. I agree with you there.
Yeah, and I think God, some helpful medicine is to begin to look at, you know what, I'm going to start with who is God and what does it say that he is? And as I embrace that, then I'm going to look at life through that lens. I mean, I think a watershed issue is, you know, God says he is love. Not that he loves,
yep.
But he is love.
Yep.
And if I throw that up to the wind and I try to assess whether that's true or not through my circumstance, well, some people's lives will be able to say, well, yes, he is. And other people's lives will be like, can't be. If you're looking, that's, it's either 2 + 2 = 4 or it's not. Either God is love or he's not. And I choose to say he is. Therefore, I will interpret my life through that lens that just says, guess what? I am loved by him because of who he is.
And once Job has that encounter, his expression at the end is, man, I opened my mouth where I shouldn't have. I spoke about things too wonderful for me to understand. That's an amazing statement.
Yeah.
He doesn't get his answer. He doesn't get, yeah, it was just a good little test. We thought we'd just shut the devil's mouth by whapping up on you.
Here's a spiritual warfare dynamic.
It wasn't that. It was Job saying, if God is in the midst of this, and if I can find him here, and when he finds him, he's too wonderful to understand. Not too powerful, not too mean, too wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think that is probably how it's going to have to be for us who live in an age that is thrown in the chaos of sin and suffering. One of my best friends in the world, I was in at USC Hospital last week with him. He's got recurrent melanoma, inoperable tumor in his lungs, going through an experimental treatment, young man in his 50s. We've got women, people listening to this podcast, two women I know who lost children to suicide in their 20s. I know people like this woman who's been raped, others who've been through incredible things. And you know what? I think the testimony is not, boy, do you look at those things and conclude, what is God like? But to look at God, whose love is big enough to consume, no matter what we go through, it's big enough to consume us in it, hold us close to himself, make right what's broken and been devoured in those things in us. One of the things that shook me to the core a number of years ago, I was reading through Acts, and Paul and Barnabas are coming back from the first missionary journey, and they've been through a lot of places, and they're on their way back, and it says they were strengthening the disciples and encouraging them to remain true to the faith by saying, here's what they say, here's the quote, we must go through many hardships to enter the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that, I've been reading it going, how is that encouraging? how is this, listen, it's going to be through hardship that we enter the kingdom. How is that good news? Unless you're already in the hardship. then it's great news.
It's phenomenal news because it's reality. I sort of feel like, you know, people that are trying to sort of tie up all the loose ends of their life. And I look at them and I'm like, good luck. I can't. I cannot make sense of everything that I've gone through. But I can, in the midst of all that we've gone through, still put my hand in the hand of a God who loves me.
Exactly.
And is bigger than all of that. You know, when Job says, you know, I've heard of you with the hearing of the ear, but now I see you with my own eye. And I repent. It isn't, oh, and I feel really bad. It's like I change the way I think. I mean, that's at the heart of what it is to repent.
The court case is no longer needed. He no longer needs to call God to the dock.
I mean, I remember a number of years ago, between our first son and our second son, Kelly was pregnant. And I had a dream one night that in the dream, I was told to me that my wife was pregnant. And in the dream, I felt like the Lord gave me a name. We were to name this child. And so I woke up kind of excited, like, wow, I never had a dream like that. And I turned to Kelly and said, honey, do you think by any chance that you could be pregnant? She says, I could be. And so she, you know, got a little home pregnancy test. And, you know, lo and behold, wow. Okay, 3 months into this, she has a miscarriage.
Hmm.
The theological conundrum for me, where, like, look, it's pretty clear. I think you began this, God. You spoke to us. This is not the outcome I would have ever presumed from the beginning of a life. And it still doesn't make any sense. But I remember to this day the kitchen where Kelly and I were both just in tears, hurting. And I remember sensing the presence of God just come into that room and hurt with us.
Yeah.
I can't prove that to anybody, but I just gotta say, out the door went all of my whys. I can think of them today and go like, you know, I still don't understand that. But just knowing that God hurt with me about an outcome that I still don't understand, so many of my little thoughts just went out the door in those seasons of life where you just began to realize, you know what, I'd love to live in a world that you could, you know, presuppose there's an answer to every question, but I don't live in that world. And I love the fact that God has not sheltered me off in some illusion, but has allowed me to face this world front and center and to realize, good or bad, hard or not, I'm with you. The thing I'm left with is I'm not alone.
Yeah.
There is pain, but I'm not alone.
And one reality that's really helped me with this is realizing, yes, the world of sin we live in is fraught with sickness and disease and corruption and hurt and pain. And it is fraught with that. And we do have seasons where we don't have any of that, which are wonderful. But then we have seasons that do. We need to know we're not abandoned. But what really helps me with all that is realizing that when God allowed this world to plunge itself into sin, he's the one that would pay the biggest price for that. So, yeah, we do pay it in little ways with sin and sickness and disappointments and miscarriages and things that affect our lives, certainly. But God embraced the pain of our sin more than any of us ever have or ever will. So it wasn't just something God said, oh, it's too bad. You kind of messed it up, so I'm going to kind of be here with you through it. He's been in it with us. He knows every bit of pain and disillusionment that we know. He was tempted in all ways like we were, yet without sin, the writer of Hebrews says. And so if people could just have the sense that my hardship doesn't mean I've been excluded from God. Hardship is often the ways God invites us deeper into himself and into his life. One of my best friends was a hospice chaplain for a number of years, a guy helped me write the Jake book at the Jake Colson site. He told me, he asked me one time, he said, how many Christians do you think die in peace? And I said, man, I would think almost all of them. He said, almost none. I said, why? He said, because we all die of something. And in the end, when you've heard the C word, when you've got cancer, when you've got something, he told me about one woman specifically, been a faithful, you know, attender, congregational attender for decades. And she ended up with cancer and was dying. And he was visiting her and the family and couldn't figure out why. She was just in this total depression. Couldn't figure out why. One day when he came to visit her, one of the daughters said, ask her about tithing. Ask her about tithing. He said, why? He said, I heard her the other night in a room screaming something about tithing. So he went in, sat down with her and are talking for a bit, and he said, the gal said you said something about tithing the other day. She said, oh, yeah, she said, I figured out why I have cancer. And he said, well, why do you have cancer? He said, in 1941, I was at home with three girls when my husband was at war in World War II in the theater in Europe. And there was a month when I wasn't able to give the full tithe to God. I couldn't and feed my girls, so I didn't give it. And now I know that the reason I have cancer now, that is so incredibly sick. First of all, tithing is a whole thing we could talk about, but the whole legalism of I have to earn this some way, and if I can find a way to earn it, I found comfort, is so evil and so heinous. We don't need to be looking for what earned this in the things that we go through. I think what we wanted to do this podcast for was to encourage people who are, just like Paul and Barnabas would do, if you're in a moment of hardship, God has not abandoned you. In fact, the greatest joy of this journey is God wants to make himself known to you in the midst of that, the fellowship of his sufferings, the embracing of God in the midst of pain, and then to live our lives not by pain avoidance. You can turn all your pain avoidance indicators in trying to follow God's will. Follow him. Some of that will lead you to further hardship and hurt. It just will. It'll lead other people saying and doing things about you that, yeah, are going to hurt. But our calling is to him, not to a pain-free existence. And that's a great freedom, even though it doesn't sound. I'm not a pain freak. I'm not an ascetic going to get my, you know, little flagellation kit out this afternoon and whoop me up beside the head. I'm not going to do it. But when I am in moments of hardship, I think what we said, find him there.
Yeah, and when you sort of dethrone the just the disinformation about pain, and you realize, you know what, it's there in life. I think it empowers your decision-making for righteousness a whole lot more. I mean, some of the most right decisions I've ever made have been the most costly.
Exactly.
And yet so many of us, the way we make our decisions is like I'm sort of assessing the pain threshold of, well, I'm not sure I want to do that. That could be, and it's like, you know what? The minute you sort of throw that out and you just go like, bottom line, what has God asked me to do? And not presume. Well, this means that guarantees that it'll be good. You know, I just want to discern what God's will for me is. And the assumption is that's going to be great. That will be prosperous. I will have comfort and, and you know, goodies galore. Yep. It's like, you know what? You know, some of God's will for you to do the right thing may be some of the most costly things you've ever. But at the end of the day, to be able to know, it's like, you know, bottom line, God, you've brought me this far. You're going to take me that far. You know, it's like you're not going to abandon me in the midst of this. There's a sense of security and a freedom that comes by just, you know, the eye-opening reality. That's the world we live in. I remember I was in India, in Calcutta, and we were working with Mother Teresa for a couple of weeks. And, you know, we're at the home of the destitute and the dying. And it's like these are the yuckiest of the yucky, dealing with some of the most excruciating, just painful illnesses. And you know,
people aren't yucky,
people.
But the need.
No. I mean, just everything around you. You just go. I felt so terrible about myself. I'm trying to feed this young man, and I'm so repulsed by everything around me. I'm just going like, oh great, you know, this is the real love of Jesus pouring out of me. I'm just going like, I'm sick to my stomach, but just being assaulted by everything around me. And you know, I'm leaving that day, and just going like, God, where's your power? You know, we're here trying to, you know, show your love. It's like show your power. It's like And I'm not the only one struggling. It's one of the young guys in our group kind of was just having a lamenting discussion with God, going, like, God, why don't you just heal these people? And the Lord asked him a question. It's just profound. He said, which is easier, for you to love these people or for me to heal them so you don't have to? And that just put a profound framework around all this, going like, I'm not sure what is up and what's down, but I just recognized, wait a minute, I'm focused on trying to avoid something difficult. God is trying to deepen his nature in me by not avoiding something difficult. And he's trying to bring forth the resources of himself. And I believe God heals. I mean, I believe God does.
Absolutely.
And releases his power. But I also recognize I can't remove the element of mystery from that. I can't attach a formula that has answers for why he does and why he doesn't, you know, that are just all tight. You're just going, you know what? All I know is God is moved by our circumstances. The most amazing thing about, you know, when Adam and Eve, through their decision, plunge this world into the darkness of sin. Because if I was God and someone messed up what I'd created, I'd start over. I'd scrap the first one. And he doesn't.
Nope.
The fact that he reaches down and says, you know what? I am powerful enough to restore and redeem all of this. I think that's where I start to get my encouragement. When Jesus says, you know, in this life you're going to have trouble, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome. I think packed into those words is that reality that if you were to envision this globe being plunged into an unintended, just cesspool of darkness and evil and sin, and as opposed to God abandoning it and starting over, he reaches down, pulls that out, and says, now watch me. I go like, man, that's a cool God. As tough as that is, I'm glad I'm on his side and he's accepted me on his.
Amen. And the God journey is always going to come back to you. Our life is in him. It's not in circumstances. It's not in meetings. It's not in, if you find it in him, then you're free to go with him wherever he wants you to go and have the impact he wants you to have.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your questions or feedback by email or at our blog at thegodjourney.com. Or you can call 24 hours a day to our comment line at 805-626-4212.